Well, Steve Goodman, legendary musician who died way, way, way too young, the Chicago legend, and an amazing songwriter. The book is called Steve Goodman Facing the Music. It's in its third edition. The author is Clay Eales, and he joins us today. How you doing, Clay?
Doing great.
Good, good. This book is so massive, my friend. I mean, I literally had to work out in order to just lift it.
Well, you know, the best review I think I had of it was the first sentence said, most people want to write a book that you can't put down, but you've written a book that you can't pick up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, so let's go back in time here. When did you first hear Steve Goodman? Were you a fan when he was? Were you a fan in the early days as well?
Oh, of course. I had all of his records in the 70s, and I saw him perform twice. Once was as an opening act for Randy Newman. That was when Randy was touring on his Short People hit back in 1977.
Yeah.
And he got the ultimate short person to open for him in Goodman. And then 4 years later, I saw him in a solo show. Both of these were in Eugene, Oregon, where I was a newspaper reporter for the Oregonian newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I already had been struck by his music, not just the recordings, but TV shows. You might remember a show called Soundstage, which originated from Chicago.
Absolutely, yeah.
Got to see him on that in 1974. It was, you see him when he came through Eugene. And, you know, as Steve Martin told me, all it took was 5 minutes and he'd have an audience. You know, he'd get you right away.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, you know, and having, you know, lived here all my whole life, it's a real special. You know, it's real special to be a Chicagoan and talk about Steve Goodman, you know, because he had such a connection to this city, obviously.
Yeah, it was his whole persona. It was his songwriting. He was a master songwriter in any event, whether it was about Chicago or not. I mean, he could do the best romantic songs, the best laugh out loud, funniest songs, and social commentary songs. And some of his best ones really were based in Chicago. Obviously, his best-known song that really put him on the map, City of New Orleans, that's a Chicago song. That train runs from Chicago to New Orleans. And of course, Go Cubs Go. That's so obviously a Chicago song.
Yeah.
That has new life today after every win at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, we don't get to hear it very often, though. The Cubs don't win very often. So
yeah, Goodman said sometimes the Cubs screw up and they actually win.
Well, that was another thing. I mean, he's so connected with the Chicago Cubs, and he was such a diehard Cub. I mean, you know, one of my favorite songs that he's written is "A Dying Cub Fan's Last Request," which is one of my favorites. One of my favorites.
With "Dying Cub Fan," that was the predecessor to "Go Cubs Go," and he actually was banned from Wrigley Field because of the Dying Cub Fan song.
Wait a minute, really? I didn't know that. Why was that? Why was he banned?
Well, it's a long story that's in the book, but the long story short is that Dallas Green, who was the general manager of the Cubs back in the early 80s, he had started a new slogan called winning a new tradition, and he didn't like the lovable loser aspect of a Dying Cub Fan's Last Request. In fact, when Goodman asked to be able to play the song inside Wrigley for Mike Leonard of the NBC Today show, they wouldn't let him in. And so the YouTube video that you see out there of Goodman playing the song is not inside Wrigley. He's up on top of a walk-up outside of left field, and the camera is shooting down on him in the foreground and Wrigley in the background.
So he's on a rooftop across the street then.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there were other people who worked for the Cubs and for GN who didn't like the fact that he couldn't play the song at Wrigley. And so one of them said, look, can you write a song that we can play on WGN, that we can play at Wrigley Field? And he looked him in the eye and he said, yeah, and it'll be an anthem. And about a week later, was born Go Cubs Go.
Right.
This was just about 6 months before he died.
Yeah, 84 was a great season for the Cubs, too. It ended up being a really amazing season for the Cubs that year.
it was, and he, it was kind of a race down to the end of the season, and he died a playoff game. He was going to be singing the national anthem for the first playoff game, but obviously he wasn't around to do that, and filling in for him was Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. Well, it was just, it's amazing. Now let's go back here and talk about Steve Goodman from the beginning. You know, like the basic stuff, like where was he born and all of that stuff.
Well, he was born in Chicago, grew up in Albany Park, and he developed. Well, we're talking about his love for baseball. If you walked out his back door, literally, you would step into Eugene Field Park and a baseball field right there. And in fact, if you hit a long one as a lefty and hit a home run, you probably the ball landed in Steve Goodman's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, across from Eugene Field Park Cemetery, so you got the Dying fan right there. Anyway, he grew up until his first year of high school there. And then they moved a little further out to the Niles Morton Grove area, where he went to high school in this enormous Maine East High School. That's where he was classmates with Hillary Rodham, who obviously we know today as Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And she was one of my more than 1,000 interviewees, and it was great to talk with her about Steve in his high school days. He put himself on the map at the high school because of his music. He was singing and guitar playing. He wouldn't go anywhere without his guitar then, and he was in the high school musicals then. He became very well known to this school of 4,000 students when he was the solo singer on the song from Showboat called Old Man River, and he brought the house down during the spring musical. And during his high school years, late in his high school years, that's when he started traveling into downtown Chicago, both the north side and the south side, to really familiarize himself with other kinds of music and to start playing music himself in the clubs.
And
he went to college at the University of Illinois downstate in Champaign, Urbana, and that's really where he got his exposure to the City of New Orleans train, riding down and back from Chicago. The Interstate 57 wasn't built all the way through then. And later he went to Lake Forest College for about a year and a half.
Now, you said
that
he...
Toward the end of that time that he was diagnosed with leukemia, and so he quit college and decided to go full-time into music.
And when did he start? You said he was playing, he always had his guitar with him when he was in high school. How early along in his life did he start playing? Did he start being a musician?
He first really picked up the guitar and learned a couple of chords during his first year of high school, which was back in Albany Park, but he really developed it while he was at Maine East High School. He was at Roosevelt High for most of his freshman year, but the other 3 years of high school at Maine East, that was when he really. I mean, he wasn't just into music either. He was a radio guy. He was the color commentator for the high school, the Blue Demons. Of Maine East High. He just was all over the place. He had a radio show at Maine East. Maine East was one of the few high schools that had its own radio station. And so every morning he was picking out songs, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary songs, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. See, we are talking with Clay Eales, who is the author of Steve Goodman Facing the Music, which is the quintessential book about Steve Goodman, and it is a massive, massive book with, tons of interviews from people all over the world into the music. Clay, can you hang on a second?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
We are gonna talk more with Clay. Clay Eales, the author of Steve Goodman Facing the Music. It's a great story. It's an interesting story, and we'll talk with Clay about that. If you have questions or comments, if you're a Steve Goodman fan, 312-591-7200. If you want to jump in, the book is called Steve Goodman Facing the Music. And by the way, I do want to mention this. On the back of the book, they have several quotes from people talking about how great the book is, and it's just it is a massive, comprehensive book. My main man, my mentor, my hero, Roy Leonard, is quoted on the back of this book. We'll talk a little bit about what Roy had to say about this book as well. But yeah, that's called Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, and it's a biography by Clay Eales right here. And it's Nick DiGilio in for Bill Leff. More coming up on WGN.
Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
Ah, yes. Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, is the name of the book, and that, of course, is a dying Cub fan's last request, which got him banned from Wrigley thanks to Dallas Green. Clay Eales is the author of the book, Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, and we welcome you back to the show. How you doing, Clay?
Oh, doing great, and you're talking to me where I'm in Toronto tomorrow, and it's just the three-day Mariposa Folk Festival here in Orillia, just north of Toronto, where Steve Goodman played Mariposa in the 70s, three different years, and that's where the third edition of the book is going to get its launch. I'm going to have two workshops at the festival this weekend, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Wow. Well, that's, so the initial printing of this book, how long a process was it for you to put that thing together?
Oh, golly. It's hard to determine exactly when I started, but I mean, in earnest, I would say 1999, so it was an eight-year project.
Wow.
It was published in May of 2007, I interviewed more than 1,000 people for the book. It was a huge project. It sort of took over my life. You go to the bookstore, you see books about all kinds of musicians, but there wasn't one about Steve, and I just figured the guy deserved a book, and if I were going to do it, it probably would be the only one, and so I wanted to do it right. So that meant being comprehensive about it. Then the book, when it came out, it sold out its first printing in just 8 months, and then the second printing sold out by last year. So having the third printing out is a real treat, because there have been some things that have happened the last few years that I can update in the book, which is now in the third printing, and of course, a book this big, 350,000 words. I mean, it's got 616 photos. I was able to add another 40 photos, and 91 footnotes, and make lots of little fixes along the way, and add some new things, and so it's a real journalist's dream to be able to keep updating this thing.
And you've got a preface by Studs Terkel and a foreword by Arlo Guthrie. That's nothing to sneeze at either.
Well, both of those guys are integral to Steve Goodman's career and life, and vice versa. Studs was a wonderful interview in 1999 when I first talked to him, and then it was late 2006 when I asked him if he could do a blurb for the book, and instead he wrote me this stunning preface. When I called his house, a young guy answered the phone, and I said, "Is Studs there?" And he said, "Yeah, but he's taking a nap." And I said, "Well, when would be the best time to call him back?" And he said, "Oh, just go ahead and email him." And I said, "He's 94 years old. He does email?" He said, "Oh, yeah, email him." So I did. And the next morning, boom, in my inbox, the subject says, you know, here's your blurb.
Nice.
And he hadn't even read the book, but he loved Goodman so much that he wanted to be a part of it. That's what happened with this book with everybody. That Goodman touched people so deeply. I mean, imagine somebody in your own life that doesn't have to be a musician, doesn't have to be even somebody who's no longer living, but somebody you haven't been in contact for 20 or 30 years with. And some guy comes along and says, "I'm doing a book on this person." And people were enthusiastic is an understatement to talk about him.
Yeah.
Some people cried when they talked to me about him.
Yeah.
And Arlo, you mentioned, that's one of the best interviews I had. He's really the spirit of the book. Without Arlo, there would be no Steve Goodman, in a sense, because he made City of New Orleans a hit. And and vice versa. You know, City of New Orleans was Arlo's only real hit, and it's what really made him acceptable to the mainstream. Back in the early 70s, Arlo was known as sort of the hippie drug guy from Woodstock and this guy who sang Alice's Restaurant. But City of New Orleans really got him on his feet. And he's so grateful for Steve Goodman in his own life. Then this just goes on and on and on with all these. I mean, I was just floored at the celebrities. You know, everybody from Steve Martin to Kris Kristofferson to Bonnie Raitt to Randy Newman to, I mean, the list just keeps going on and on and on.
Yeah.
People who were delighted to talk with me about him.
Yeah, well, he touched a lot of people. You know how I was turned on to Steve Goodman and through Roy Leonard right here at WGN. I used to listen to Roy Leonard when I was a kid, and he would constantly talk about Steve Goodman. He had him on the show. He would play his music all the time. And I was exposed to Steve Goodman through Roy Leonard, who is quoted on the back of your book.
Well, Roy is a great interview in the book. And Roy had Steve on the show, as you said, many times, and was so kind to me in sharing materials as well as his own reminiscences. And the Dying Cup fan, that's probably the quintessential exchange on the Roy Leonard show. And I had access to those tapes, and it was just magical anytime he was on WGN. Roy and Steve had a real strong connection.
They did.
Roy said that Steve was the guy who had the greatest sense of humor of any human being he'd ever met.
Yeah.
When they talked, it wasn't any kind of a pretense. He said, this is from Roy himself. He says, Steve had a natural feeling for what should be said and done. It was like having a beer together in a bar.
Yeah.
He never had to put on a persona other than what he was. He looked at you, and you would like him immediately. And so they really had a rapport.
You know, it's amazing. What's stunning about his life is that he was, you know, diagnosed at a young age with leukemia and lived 15 years knowing that.
You have to understand that back when he was diagnosed in 69, the research was so much in its infancy. It was not like today where you think about bone marrow transplants or stem cell transplants. I mean, they were still experimenting with transplants on dogs at that point. The level of human treatment for leukemia was just totally experimental. If you were told you had leukemia, basically it was a death sentence, and you weren't going to live more than a year. And through some very fortunate experimental treatment that Steve got at Sloan Kettering in New York, he was able to live another 15 years. You know, if he had gone the way of most leukemia patients at the time, we would not have City of New Orleans.
Yeah.
We would not have so many other songs and so many other experiences with Steve. I mean, there are so many recordings of Steve, but the best Steve Goodman was live Steve Goodman. I mean, and that's what he strove for the most. He talked about, well, you got your songwriters, your guitar players, and your singers, but what I try to do is put it all together and be the best entertainer I can be.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, if you saw him once, he got you.
Yeah. Clay, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Clay Eales is with us, and the book is called Steve Goodman Facing the Music, Clay Eales, and that's E-A-L. S is his last name, and it's in its third printing right now. If you have a question or a comment, or if you're a Steve Goodman fan, we're going to talk with Clay a little bit more after the news about this massive undertaking, this amazing book, the quintessential book about Steve Goodman. If you want to jump in, it's 312-591-7200. If you're on hold, please hang on. We'll get to your calls and your questions for Clay Eales, the author of Steve Goodman Facing the Music.
Singing good morning, America, how are you? Don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm just the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when day's done. I was dealing cards with the old man in the club car. And it's penny a point, there ain't nobody keeping score.
Steve Goodman, the late, the great Steve Goodman, who had such an impact in the world of music, an amazing folk musician, but also had a huge impact on anybody he crossed, anybody who came across him, and a really great son of Chicago. Steve Goodman, Facing the Music is the name of the book. It is the most comprehensive biography I may have seen, not just of Steve Goodman, but of anyone. Clay Eales is the author. It's in its third edition, and we welcome Clay back to the show. Clay, this is really, congratulations on such a monster undertaking. It's really wonderful that this thing exists.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful compliment. You know, it really was the project of my life. It took 8 years, and I think the seeds were sown back in the 80s and in the 70s when I saw him. And then I wrote an obituary on him when he died in my hometown in Seattle and for a local newspaper. And just he got under my skin. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, who wants to write the 50th book on Elvis? I mean,
yeah.
there wasn't a book on this guy, and there really deserved to be one.
I absolutely agree with you, and I was astonished to see that that there hadn't been a book. I mean, that's exactly why that was your motivation for doing it, because you couldn't believe that there wasn't a book about such an amazingly talented musician and songwriter.
Yeah, and you know, the irony is that he flew under the radar a little bit. I mean, he's so well known in Chicago, but even in Chicago, he's not a household name in a mainstream sense. I mean, his biggest hit really was in the voices of other people, Arlo Guthrie, Willie Nelson, but he had such an influence on other people. He would be almost like the teacher, the mentor, and then people would soar past him. People like that include Jimmy Buffett, who at one time was coming through Chicago as a up-and-coming musician and sleeping on Steve Goodman's couch.
Yeah.
And borrowing money from Goodman to get to the next gig.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, a few weeks ago they celebrated the 80th birthday of Earl, who was the Earl of Old Town, and you know, they had an incredible number of extraordinary folk musicians, you know, in and around from the Chicago area, including Bonnie Collock.
I wish I could have been there, but I watched the whole thing on podcast.
Yeah,
what an amazing show that was.
Yeah, I had Bonnie Collock,
and it was one after the other after the other. I would say 90% of the people on stage there I interviewed for the book.
Yeah.
And so it was like looking at a show of old friends.
Yeah, it was great to have them. I had several of the musicians in studio with me the day beforehand to talk about it, and it was so great. And everybody had such great Steve Goodman stories. What was it, Clay? You know, that was a very special time in this city. That was an old town, was a very special area, and that whole area was really, really alive with great music. And Steve was kind of leading the way at that time. Tell me about what it was like in the old town area during the 70s and the late 60s.
Well, the best way to put it, I think, is to quote Kris Kristofferson, who told me that we all know that in the 1960s that the real hub for folk music was Village in New York. And, you know, the icon album cover of the time is Peter, Paul, and Mary standing in front of the brick wall of the Bitter Inn,
the
club down in the Village. Well, Kristofferson said that Chicago in the 70s was the Greenwich Village of the 70s, and that was where you wanted to come to play. And it was a different time. People may not realize today, go to a show either in a club or in a dinner or whatever, and it's a one show and then it's gone. But in those days, if you played a city, a town, you played for a week, and the gigs were for a week. And we were talking the Earl of Old Town. The list of clubs goes on and on. There's the Quiet Night, so somebody would come into town for a week and play, and you would have the opportunity not only to see them do their A-list stuff, but they would try experiments with what they were doing because they had so much time to work with, and they really got to know the locals. And really, that's how Steve Goodman got his break to go to the big time, was this unlikely combination of Kris Kristofferson and Paul Anka in Chicago in early 1971. Kristofferson had come in to play the Quiet Night for a week, and Paul Anka was across town at the Palmer House, and the two had flown into Chicago on the same plane together, and Anka said he was really grateful to Kristofferson because he had put Kristofferson's song "Help Me Make It Through the Night" into his own sort of Vegas-style set.
Yeah.
He came over to the Quiet Night one night to visit Chris and got up on stage and sang that song in his tuxedo, and they all went out to dinner, a late-night, early-morning dinner at the Palmer House at Anka's suite, and Goodman was there because he was opening for Kristofferson. And Kristofferson leans over and says, "Well, I want you to play for Anka. Would you like to learn to dance?" Which was one of Goodman's first songs.
Yeah. A
tremendously romantic song. And he plays it for Anka. And Anka says, how would you like a plane ticket to New York? I mean, it happened just like that.
Wow.
And Goodman, you know, what would you do if you were in that situation? You'd probably say, "Gee, thanks, Mr. Anka." First thing Goodman says, besides making a joke, saying, "Well, how'd you like to see the short, fat Jewish kid dive into the vat of chicken Kiev?" But he doesn't say thank you. He says, "Well, if you think I'm good, you got to hear my friend John Prine."
Oh man!
So the next time night, they all go. This is like at 3 a.m. They all go to the Earl of Old Town where Prine is waiting for him. Prine plays them a set. And Kristofferson leans over to Anka and says, "Well, I guess you're buying two plane tickets to New York." And both of them go to New York, and they get record contracts very quickly that late spring, early summer of 71, and both of them have albums out that
wow.
fall.
What a great story. And, what a great story that is.
Yeah,
man.
It really demonstrates his generosity. You know, without Steve Goodman, there wouldn't be a John Prine. Goodman was the one who made that happen for Prine, and Prine dedicates a song in his concert. Every concert he plays, there's a song called "Souvenirs," which is a song about friendship.
Yeah,
and he dedicates it to Steve.
Wow, what a great story! One of many, many amazing stories that are in included in this book. Steve Goodman Facing the Music. If you're a Steve Goodman fan, this book is a must. It's by Clay Eales. It's in its third edition. Clay, we have some people on the line who are Steve Goodman fans who have questions. Is that okay?
Oh, love to talk.
Okay, here is Jim, who's in Antioch on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I love the backstory of the city of New Orleans. Is there a big backstory for Lincoln Park Pirates?
Lincoln Park Pirates.
Like getting towed from these late night establishments and such, couldn't find this car.
That's absolutely one of my favorite Steve Goodman songs because I've been towed by the Lincoln Park towing company many, many times, Clay. So tell us the origin of that.
Well, you know, he wrote the song. The way to see Steve Goodman as a songwriter is as a journalist himself. He said he had a hard time making things up. He sort of had to see things first. And he kept hearing these stories about people who got their cars towed. And it wasn't just that, but it was these big, hairy, monster-type late-night guys you wouldn't want to meet up with on the street who would be the ones who, I mean, there were some really bad stories, you know,
yeah.
them knifing people.
Yeah. And
anyway, the alderman at the time in that area of Chicago, north side of Chicago, Dick Simpson, was collecting a file, and there was an investigation, an attorney general's investigation into the whole thing. Goodman actually went down to Dick Simpson's office and took notes on his file so that he could write the song.
Huh.
And the reason that it turned out to be Lincoln Park Pirates is that week he had seen on TV, he'd seen the Disney version of Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island with, you know, Long John Silver.
Right.
And so he put the two together. He made it into a sea chanty, you know, way, hey, tow him away. And he wrote the song actually a year before it was on a record album because he figured it might be too local. But then, you know, for a national album. But then as he started to play it around the country, he realized there are bad guys towing cars all over the country. And so he put it on his second album, and it became one of his most requested songs.
Yeah.
And it's a quintessential Chicago song. There are all the references to, to you know, the airports and, you know, and taking it to its logical extreme, you know, towing all the boats in Belmont Harbor.
Right. No, it's a great song. It's, wow, that's interesting that he would you know, want it to be that authentic, going down and taking notes and things like that before writing the song.
Well, he says it was like your basic English class. You know, that's what an English teacher would tell you to do. He said, don't when you write something, tell me how to feel. He says, describe vividly, and then you'll know how to feel. And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
He could put pictures in your mind.
Yeah.
He was a genius at that.
Yeah. Clay, hang on. All right, Clay Eales is with us, and we are talking about the great Steve Goodman. Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, is the name of the book, and it's in its third edition right now, and it's a massive book. And if you are a Steve Goodman fan, this is a must purchase. If you want to jump in, if you have a question or a comment about Steve Earle, Clay Eales is with us, and again, the book is called Steve Goodman, Facing the Music. Nick DiGilio in for Bill Leff on WGN.
Anyway, tow them away. The Lincoln Park Pirates are we. From Wilmette to Gary, there's none that's so hairy, and we always collect our fee. Anyway, tow them away. We plunder the streets of your town. Be it Edsel or Chevy, there's no car too heavy, and no one can make us shut down.
Yes, Steve Goodman.
Cars when we gotta.
Lincoln Park Pirates, one of the classic Steve Goodman songs. The book is called Steve Goodman, Facing the Music. The author is Clay Eales, with a preface by Studs Terkel, a foreword by Arlo Guthrie, and interviews with so many famous musicians who were touched by Steve Goodman's work. Thousands of interviews, in fact. We welcome the author back to the show. Clay Eales is with us. Clay, welcome back, sir.
Oh, thank you.
And now, how, you know, you said that a lot of people were very forthcoming, you know, to be interviewed about Steve Goodman. Were there a lot of, did you hear a lot of commonalities in the stories that people had about him?
Well, of course. And it just is, it's kind of mind-boggling to think that in his 36 years, he touched so many people so deeply. One of the commonalities I think we talked about before was his generosity, as in the story with John Prine, bringing him to prominence. But the other one of the other commonalities is that you notice with performers that they have a different personality on stage. You know, they may be warm and appealing on stage, but off stage, they're quite different. That wasn't the case with Steve Goodman. You know, hundreds of people told me he was the same guy. The guy that you kind of fell in love with on stage, he was the guy who would give you the shirt off his back off stage. And I'm talking about the musicians who played with him, the fans who would talk with him, just people, friends and family in his life. He was just quite a genuine person. And probably the biggest theme of the book is mortality. Did this aspect of his personality sort of emerge because he was diagnosed with leukemia and didn't have the luxury of forgetting that he was going to die soon? Or was he this way from the beginning? And so I, you know, good feather, shoe feather. And I walked around and talked with friends from his grade school days and high school days in Albany Park and out in Niles Morton Grove, more than 100 of his high school classmates, and this was way before he was diagnosed. So that's one of the commonalities, is that what you see was the real Steve Goodman.
We have someone here. Sue is in River Forest on WGN. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you, Clay and Nick. And I just want to say that I had been involved with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society since 2007, and doing races and everything. And anyway, I ended up finishing a race and then finding out about that dedication for the post office that day. And I went over there for the dedication, and that was really neat. I mean, I met his mother and Todd Ricketts, and that was a really neat experience.
Yeah, Clay, tell us a little bit about that, the post office dedication.
Yes, and that's one of the new things in the book. There's a big color photo of Steve along with his family, his mom, his widow Nancy, who's now remarried, and his three daughters, and of course the team owner and the legislator who got this through Congress. This was an act of Congress to name the post office, and the reason, of course, was the post office is the closest one to Wrigley Field. And Goodman has become so inextricably identified with the Cubs and Wrigley Field that it just seemed to be logical to rename post office in Goodman's honor. And the representative was Mike Quigley, who pushed it through Congress. And Obama, obviously a Chicago guy, signed it into law. And the dedication was in October of 2010. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, Goodman's music and influence just lives on. And so it's tremendously satisfying for me to be able to keep updating people about that kind of thing by getting it into the book.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, thank you. That was a really terrific experience, and thank you for writing this book.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Sue.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. 312-591-7200 is the phone number. Clay, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, sir. I mean, what a monumental undertaking this is. And I also want to mention that everything that he's ever recorded is in here. There are the indices in the indexes in the back are unbelievable and just loaded with information. Everything anybody could ever want to know about Steve Goodman, Facing the Music, is the book. And Clay, you can add on to this thing, you know, after a few years, because, you know, the stories are going to continue, even though Steve Goodman is not with us.
That's a wonderful legacy for anybody to have, and appreciate the time and your enthusiasm. You're an example that there are Steve Goodman people everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking nearly 30 years ago. It's 1984 that Steve died, and he still goes on in so many ways, You know, this book is even an example. You know, what a wonderful legacy to have touched people so deeply that you have an effect on people long after you're gone.
Yeah, it's true. Well, congratulations on the book, Clay, and thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks so much, Nick.
Okay, take care. There you go. There is Clay Eales, who is the author of Steve Goodman, Facing the Music.